Sam Dolan, who will tell us about cell phones via mode regularization and time domain evolution.
Okay, thank you very much, Leo. It's a thrill to be here. Like I said, still a bit jet lagged and wandering around in front of you with a cool cue. So I'm working at Southampton, and I'm describing joint work with Leo and also with Barry Wardell. Could you ask the technician if we could have some help with that, with the clicker? Okay, so there's three sections of my talk that I want to get through. The first is an overview of puncture formulations for self-force problems. The second is describing an implementation for finding the scalar field self-force, the circular orbits on Schwarzschild, using this particular time domain method. And the third section is describing a separate implementation to tackle the problem for Kerr. So let me begin by thinking about this puncture formulation. Well, the first step is the Detweiler-Whiting splitting of our physical field into a radiative part and a singular part. Now, once you've identified the radiative part, you can find the self-force just by taking the derivatives and evaluating on the world line. But all of the clever stuff goes into this splitting. So essentially, we have a source field equation, some delta function source on a world line. Then if we can identify the singular, the symmetric part, we can subtract that away from the physical field to be left with the radiative part. Now, the singular part has a decomposition in terms of a green function with the integral taken along the world line. If I draw the world line here in some field point x, it turns out that the green function for the singular field has a Hadamard expansion with a direct part on the light cone and also a part in which has got support outside of the light cone only. So because of this form, it turns out that the integral of the green function only has support between the retarded point and the advanced point. So this can be evaluated by taking an integral along a finite part of the world line. Now, the idea of a puncture scheme is to take away from our field some puncture which locally looks like the S field. So generally, I'm going to be introducing some coordinate expansion and defining a puncture field and also defining a residual field, which is just the difference between the physical field and the puncture. Now, in some sense, having a higher order puncture gives better results. But I want to clarify what I mean by that. So I'm going to talk about the order of the puncture function. The order is related to the smoothness of the residual. So let me argue by introducing a scaling parameter for the coordinate expansion. I'll call that lambda. And then the very lowest order puncture, which I'll call first order, looks like this. And so you can see that it looks like a 1 over mod lambda scaling parameter. So that leaves a residual which is actually discontinuous on the world line. So that's the very crudest attempt. Now I'm going to assume that the real S field has an expansion like this, so in powers of lambda, but with this mod on the bottom. And now I'm going to make a definition of an nth order puncture. Well, an nth order puncture is the same as the S field up to some order in lambda. So if I make this definition, then I find that the residual field, the thing that we're going to use to evaluate the cell force, is the same as the radiative field up to a certain order. And this is, you can see, non-smooth up to this order. And from this, in the formulation, we need to also calculate an effective source by taking the box puncture. And this will be of order this. OK, so with that classification, I showed you the very crudest, the first order. But then in a paper of Barrett, Goldman, and Sago, they looked at the next order puncture. And also, I think, Ian Vega and Steve Detweiler have looked at punctures as well. And recently, Barry Wardell has been developing methods for evaluating the Detweiler-Whiting field. And he's able to supply to me punctures up to fourth order. So the good thing about the fourth order puncture is that the effective source turns out to be continuous on the world line. So let me show you a quick picture of the source evaluated from Barry's code. And here I'm plotting the shape of the effective source in the coordinate difference plane. And you can see that it's continuous but not differentiable in the middle here. OK, well, now what can we do with this? Well, if we plug this puncture into an N-mode scheme, which was described by Lear back in 2007, basically we split the field into azimuthal modes, then it turns out that the smoothness of the residual, that is the order of the puncture we use, influences the convergence of the mode sum. So this is the sum over M. I've got a heuristic icon to describe how that goes, but I'm going to have to skip it for brevity. So let's look again at our punctures. If we use a fourth order puncture, it turns out that the self force found from the derivative of the field converges in the high n limit as 1 over n to the 4. And this is a lot better than our previous attempts, which were 1 over n squared. So this is going to lead to and really underpin the accuracy of the results I'm going to show next. OK, so now, as part two of my talk, let me describe an implementation of the method to find the self-force for circular orbits on Schwarzschild. Now, there's lots of ingredients that go in, and I've described two of them. I'd like to quickly describe two others, so the world tube formulation and the finite difference method we're using. Then we have to run many simulations, extrapolate and calculate the self-force from sums over M. Now, the sums over M look like this. We're calculating a distributive part. Well, this is really the easy part to calculate. And we're also calculating a conservative part. And both are found from sums over the azimuthal number. Okay, so in this implementation, we construct a world tube around the world line. The world tube has some finite extent in R and theta. And inside that tube, we evolve the residual field with an effective source. Outside the tube, we evolve the full field. And on the boundary of the tube, we reconstruct this relationship. So then we need to evolve this on a 2 plus 1b grid. And the grid that we used was with null coordinates u and v, and also a theta direction. And we were evolving this wave equation, the Schwarzschild, with a source. And that source was inside the world tube, the effective source calculated from the puncture, and outside the world tube, just zero. And we used a second order accurate finite difference scheme, which was described in this paper. And so from points in a cell, you can construct second order accurate finite differences and come up with a scheme that looks a bit like this. Now, along the way, we encountered a numerical instability. And this numerical instability can arise near the poles. And if we look at this through a von Neumann stability analysis, it turns out there's a condition on the ratio of the grid spacings. So the grid spacing in theta divided by the grid spacing in R star of T has to be greater than this. So here, this is just the maximum radial function. But in here, we have a function of m. So at high m, this instability gets worse. But this instability condition is actually worse than the Courant condition because it gets worse at high M. But it's not too hard to mitigate for this by actually moving in the boundary points at the poles, because asymptotically the high M modes go like this close to the poles. So they're very flat close to the poles. So that's a thing we have to overcome. So now let me explain how the code would run. We'd evolve with some arbitrary initial conditions on a grid like this, with a world tube, and then we'd extract the field and its derivatives all the way along here, which is a constant r. So that r would be the radius of the orbit. If I extract the field along here, I can then plot the field as a function of time, and it looks something a bit like this. You've got some initial noise which propagates away, and the system settles down to a steady state. And the value of the field that it reaches depends on the grid resolution. So as I refine the grid, I converge upon what we hope to be the physical value. So now if I take the final value and I plot it as a function of grid resolution, it looks something like this. So grid resolution along here, find the value up here. We can then hit this to extrapolate to infinite grid resolution. And the good thing is, well, we have a second order finite difference method, and we're finding nice quadratic convergence in grid resolution. So each of these blue points was a separate run. Okay, so then to calculate self-force, we have to do a sum over modes. The easier one is the dissipative component of the self-force. Here, it turns out that the sum over modes is just exponentially convergent. So here I've plotted a log scale here and a linear scale here. You can see that the higher modes just decay exponentially. On the other hand, the sum over modes for the conservative part of the self-force, we find a power law convergence, the higher end tail. So what I'm showing here is a comparison of using second order, third order, and fourth order punches, so they give more smooth residuals. And you can see that for this component, the second order and third order give a tail which converges with 1 over m squared, but the fourth order now gives us 1 over m to the 4. And I can try and describe why that is later if you like. But that's good because we found when we were using a second order puncture that the majority of our error was coming from fitting the high M tail. But if we then improve the convergence of the high M tail, we can actually reduce the error in our numerical results. So here I'm just trying to give you the values of R equals 7 that we calculated. This is the real result, and here is some estimates from the code. And as we improve the order of the puncture function, we get a more accurate result. Okay, so let me just show the same thing now, but for some different radii for the circular orbit. So here this is showing the dissipative part which converges exponentially. We have these nice straight lines. Now let's take a look at the error of the result that's coming out. Well, rather pleasingly, we're finding for the very strong field orbits, the close orbits, we're getting good results with very small errors, Schwarzschild. Unfortunately, that error gets worse as we go to larger radii. In fact, I haven't included 30m, which I'm having some problems with, which produces a very big error, which is something we're trying to get a handle on. But the message is that small radii, we're getting good accuracy with Schwarzschild. Okay, so here again I've plotted the different radii, the value with m on a log-log plot. And you can see that here we've got the high m tail, which is just now a straight line. Sorry, I may be slightly misdescribing. This is the easy part, the dissipative part, and the errors are very good. The harder part is the conservative part with this power law tail, and here the errors are still quite good, but they're not as good. And you can see that at large radii, actually, they're quite bad. Okay. So we need to model and eliminate sources of error. And these are the ones we feel we've got a handle on. But at the moment, I haven't quite got a handle on what I'm calling relaxation time error. And that's basically the time it takes for the system to fall into a steady state. Particularly for the m equals 0 mode, I'm finding what looks like a power law decay here, and so I just need to put a bit more work into understanding this. For the higher modes, it looks like there's also a combination of power law and quasi-normal mode ringing as it settles down. Okay, so now in the third part of the talk, I'd like to talk about moving on to doing the same thing but for Kerr spacetime. And last year, Niels presented some results for circular orbits on Kerr using a frequency domain code. So now at CAP 13, I'd like to go back to this problem, but with a time domain approach. So now we have two parameters, the radius of the orbit and the rotation of the black hole. And essentially the problem is the same. I'm going to construct a world tube. I'm going to use a puncture supplied by Barry to go to higher orders. And I'm going to evolve a wave equation. So the wave equation now is a little more complicated. It has these linear derivatives, which are rather nasty in that they seem to cause more instability to finite difference methods. So I've tried some various finite difference schemes for this problem. And generically, I seem to have problems with instabilities, which I'd like to discuss maybe over the coffee break. But in the end, I had the most success with using method 2C here, which I'll quickly describe. So method 2C, I use the method of lines. So I evolve a set of coupled first order ODEs for the field and for the time derivative on a rectangular grid using second order finite differencing on the spatial slice. But to get good stability properties, I had to go to a fourth order Runge cutter to step forward in time. Now, this has produced some results for Capra, but it's rather slow, so maybe not optimal. Okay, so now let me just quickly finish by giving some self-force results for a moderately rotating black hole and comparing them with Niels' results from last year. So again, at low radii, I'm getting some reasonably good fits. What I haven't shown here is above R equals 20, it tends to get worse. But still, this is quite a nice confirmation that what Niels presented last year is correct, not that we have any doubts. And also, it's a test, as Mike said, to be honest. So one more graph, and this is showing the radial self-force on the innermost stable circular orbit, which, of course, is a function of A. And here, the red line shows the results from Niels Warburton's code, and the blue dots show the results of mine. So at least to the human eye, they're in good agreement. Okay, so to conclude, we've come up with the first demonstration of the N-mode regularization method, which was described back in 2007. And I think these are the first time domain results for circular orbits on Kerr, although there may be other presentations this year. I hope I've shown that the 2+1 dimensional approach can be competitive with 3+1, the kind of numerical relativity approaches, but there's also other talks to listen to. Now, crucial has been understanding that the order of the puncture directly affects the convergence rate of the mode sum. And having a good high-order expansion of the puncture is the key ingredient here. So listen out for Barry's talk later on. And we've shown good accuracy for strong field circular orbits. And with this framework, there's some interesting future directions. We can look at various ways to improve the current implementation with higher-order schemes or grid refinement, and so on. We can look at eccentric orbits in Kerr, maybe moving on from what frequency domain codes can do. And we can move to the gravitational case. In particular, I'd like to have a look at circular orbits on Kerr for gravitational self-force. Okay, so that's the end.